Hello and welcome to Kicking Tires. My name is Jimmy.
And I'm Justin.
And today is August 17th. And we got some exciting news from GMC, Chevy, Porsche, and a whole bunch from Dodge. But we'll get to that in a bit. Let's first dive into Chevy.
GMC Canyon.
Oh, right. Same thing.
Yeah, we talked about the Colorado last week, but right after our show last week, GMC released their Canyon. It's, largely the
Wasn't it
same
2 weeks
car
ago?
as. Oh yeah,
It's
I
2 weeks
guess the
ago.
Canyon was later then.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, it's a different, it's just like previous models. It's a slightly different look, but very similar trims and packages, just different names on it, kind of. But you do get the higher end Denali trim, AT4X, which is the one that I'd be most interested in. But I do like the look of this Canyon. I can't think of any GMC trucks that I would rather have over the Chevy equivalent in the past, at least in terms of styling. But this might come pretty close because I don't know. It just looks proper in the 84 or 84X trims.
I think the 84, like, so the 84 is one up from base. That's like the sweet spot, very similar to the Trail Boss that's on the Colorado. I think that's the sweet spot. But what's good with the 84 with the GMC here is you still get a lot of the LED elements. So this feels a little bit more high end, as GMCs tend to feel comparing to the Chevy counterpart.
Yeah, I think typically GMC goes for a slightly older demographic, whereas Chevy is more to the younger guys. So I get that the more premium feel and feature packaging makes sense on the Canyon.
The Denali, the interior of it looks really nice.
Yeah, and like way beyond any other mid-size truck we've ever seen. Like, it's nothing like mind-blowing like in itself, but it just goes to show how lazy all other manufacturers have been, and including GM,
Including them, yeah.
especially GM, with their mid-size interiors, because like this is what you need to be making. And even the regular models are pretty nice. Like, it's a big step. Even the base models are still such a step up from anything Toyota makes. And I mean, Ranger. Yeah, this is another level.
Yeah, you get the Denali, you get open pore wood, stitch leather dash. I mean, even the AT4 has leather dash on it. Like, it looks still really good.
Yeah, you don't have to go super expensive to get still a best in class interior, because you compare apples to apples, like what's your entry level or mid level trim, and nothing will come close. And the cheapest Gladiator is still way up there.
Yeah, this actually is it's properly nice. I do really like this. The only thing I saw that was kind of crazy is the AT4X Edition 1 pricing. It was a lot. It was like 65 grand US or something like that. It was a lot of money, which is like Bronco Raptor money.
But you do get a lot of that Raptor performance in terms of off-road performance, and you get a lot of practicality with this kind of truck, because that's one thing you can't get with a Bronco or a Wrangler, or even an F-150 Raptor, come to think of it. Because you know what, these are very capable vehicles off-road, but the F-150 is way too big. The Bronco, you can't move anything in it. Like, it's a tiny car inside. Same thing with the Wrangler. It's such a compromise on road. It'll fit in normal parking spots if you don't put ridiculous tires on it. But no, the AT4X, the ZR2, these kind of trucks, they just work. They're kind of like a Goldilocks truck, right? Like, I think you can tow a normal amount that, typical boat, motorcycles, even a car trailer, it will do that just fine. And you could do the off-roady stuff because it's got the front locker, it's got the Multimatic suspension,
That
stuff like that.
DSSV.
Yeah, and it rides amazing. interior is nice. So it is kind of that truck to do it all, because like the Raptor is perfect. Like, honestly, looking at the prices of what, you know, a Rubicon goes for, the Raptor just makes sense. Like an F-150 Raptor makes a lot of sense. It rides great, interior is great, but it's just so hard to live with, because unless you're, you know, kind of in the middle of nowhere USA, if you live in an urban environment, that size just doesn't work.
It's not a light truck. The AT4X edition one is 5,200 pounds.
That's heavier than my F-150. Like, quite significantly heavier.
A base four-wheel drive elevation is 4,630.
Right. Where does that weight come from? I know there's a lot of underbody protection.
Yeah, probably that.
And tech.
Bumpers?
Yeah, I'm sure you're losing. Bumpers do weigh, like a steel bumper does weigh significantly.
Yeah, but more. Doesn't have like, it has like the tubular front thing, but it doesn't have like an actual steel bumper.
True.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm curious where the weight comes in.
Yeah, the edition one is 5,210. AT4X is 4,970. So 300 pound difference between the two.
Yeah, like the diffs and axles and stuff like that is going to be upgraded too.
And it has a tubular like rocker panel protection as well. So like it's gonna add quite a
bit. Yeah, like rock sliders.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I think it'll be just fine. I'm pretty excited about this. I'm kind of considering going down to a midsize, because I don't know if I talked about this before, but the rule with my Strada is that all four tires, like I have a driveway in front of my garage, so I can park three cars, but the car that's in the driveway, all four tires have to be on the pavement, like my driveway. It cannot be on the Strada common area pavement, but they don't talk about overhang. And so I parked the Colorados that are two on there, and it actually fits. I got all four tires on with like no room to spare, like basically touching the garage door, but it does fit. So definitely want to consider something like this, because my F-150 just does not come home, because I cannot bring it. It's just too big.
Just park it on the street.
Yeah, that's kind of the only way.
Yeah, towing is not bad. I mean, depending on which one you get. If you don't go with
I tried it already. Like, I tried it with the old car.
Well, with
the new one's only better.
The AT, like, if you just get the regular AT4, is 7,700 pounds. If you get the AT4X with all the goodies that I know you want, is 6,000. But if you get the edition one, it actually lowers it down a little bit more to 5,500.
Yeah. So I tried the ZR2 with 6,000, and it was like putting a 4,000 pound trailer on it was very nice. Like,
okay.
Did not notice it whatsoever. And that's all I need to tow. I don't need anything beyond that.
Not bad. Not bad. Definitely something to consider. Or would you want the upgrade? Chevy has released the Silverado ZR2 Bison.
Right.
Very similar to the AT4X Sierra that we saw like 3-4 weeks back now. Basically the same thing. It's in collaboration with the American Expedition Vehicle, AEV, to make this the most capable ZR2 ever. And it's priced very similar to that Sierra. Very, very high at $78,490. So it's expensive, yes, but you're getting a decent amount of like stuff with it. Like, you get more skid plates, rocker panel protection, different front and rear bumper that's made from stamped steel, integrated tow hooks with steps, and there's a whole bunch of things to really make it like this off-road rig ready. But it only has 33 inch tires, Wrangler Territory MT33s.
I think that's about what fits and what works for like a daily or street driven vehicle. I don't know if you noticed, but they mentioned a Duratec diesel, or Duramax, sorry, not Ford, Duramax diesel option that will come on some trims. I'm assuming on the ZR2 Bison trim, which is
no, it's not. It's not. I looked at it. ZR2 Bison will only have the 6.2 liter V8. Huh. But it's available for other trims.
Yeah, so 305 horsepower, 495.
It's tricky.
It doesn't make sense that they would mention that with the Bison trim, but either way, they're putting a lot of firepower under the hood of these Colorados, and really is going to make the competition take notice, because the Frontier is already the most powerful, I think, and that's not very, very much power, right? The Tacoma is completely gutless. The Wrangler is slow as balls. The Gladiator. Like, there's nothing else that has this kind of firepower behind it. Like, you can tune up a Ranger with that, 2.3 turbo, but it's still just a four-cylinder. They're putting a V8 and a diesel option.
I do like that blacked out multi tailgate. It makes it look kind of cooler.
That's just me. Don't care for it. At least not in white. Yeah, in the white, the black trim on the white car just makes it look a little bit base model. Because typically you associate that with pickup trucks.
Yeah, yeah.
Like the white rental car look with the black everything,
yeah,
like the I black door handles, mirror, grill, all that stuff. And it just looks low rent.
Yeah. Yeah, I can see that. I can definitely see that. Interior is not too bad. AEV seats or AEV embroidered seats. Mm-hmm. Not too bad looking. Yeah. Not a bad truck, but like I said, I mean, kind of the same thing with the Sierra AT4X. It's like, would you pay $78,000 for this, or would you just buy yourself a Raptor?
Well, a Raptor is over 100, realistically.
The base model Raptor, but a base model Raptor. We talked about this when we looked at Sierra. It was the same price. Mm-hmm. But let's move on to something that Justin is absolutely loving, and he already put deposit down on.
They will not take your deposit on this. You can try walking in a showroom and ordering one, but you'll never get it.
He put his GT4 for trade-in.
They don't even want the GT4.
They don't care about your GT4.
They don't want a GT4 because what the car is the 992 GT3 RS. So we've seen the GT3 already. GT3 RS is the kind of the model to get. It's always been the model to get, right? Like, we've since the 997, the GT3 RS is it's just that extra step, right? We got that now. Since the 991, we've got that really insane wide body, and that's just taken to the next level with this 992 generation. I really like the bumper, the aero. It's just so over the top, but it's done almost better than the other models. Like, I really don't like the normal GT3 non-RS hood, how it just has two random rectangular slits in the hood.
Mm. Yep.
But this one, it's more functional. It's just more cohesive because it just matches everything, right? It matches the fender slashes, it matches the wing, matches the bumpers. Those two L-shaped vents in the hood, they just work better for me. It's fully functional. So
I was watching the video of the guy like dissecting all the bits and pieces. Yeah. How those L pieces, they help the air direct from that air exchanger that's up front,
yeah,
to the side of the vehicle rather than over the top.
Mm-hmm.
So that your all the air that's over the top goes to that rear engine, is cold air, and you get warm air off to the side.
Right. So like, and it's so cool because what they've done is they've gotten rid of the frunk, right? And instead of the frunk, in place of the frunk, you get a giant central radiator. Rather than having little radiators,
because
I had this problem. I had this problem over this weekend at Area 27 and two weekends ago over at Ridge in the GT4, which is there's just not enough frontal area for air, you know, fresh ambient air to come in. And the cooling just couldn't keep up. My oil temps were up to 143 Celsius.
Oh, wow.
Cars generally blow up at that temperature. Which kudos to Porsche, that car did not blow up, but it's a lot of 718s have blown up in the earlier years. And so going with this type of design, yes, it's more race car oriented. You're not going to have, you know, the front storage was awesome for Putting you could put two helmets and a decent amount of luggage in there. You know, for you know, typical track outing, I would say it's really nice to have that frunk. But if it means the car will perform better, make more and more consistent power, I think it's worth it. And it's an RS, like it's not meant to be super practical. You still have the rear, what was originally the rear seat area to store some of your helmets and your luggage, stuff like that. Or of course you can also tow this to the track because it is kind of that track special model. Really aggressive aero though, like it's insane. Like we can go on and on about the aero. There's a few key things to mention that are just so cool. The DRS wing, that's kind of the biggest deal, I think. It's you can't miss it. It's huge. Swan neck with hydraulic actuators on it. So how it works is when you hit the button on the steering wheel, much like an F1 car, drag reduction happens. So say you're coming onto the front straight on the track, you want to pick up a few extra Ks top speed on that track. You just hit that button. It smooths it out. And you get a little bit more speed. I'm really curious how that feels, just the sensation of the active aero. You know, you're just pulling along, and then you hit that DRS button, and then, you know, just you feel that reduction of drag. I think that would be really cool.
So what's, I just want to interrupt here. What's cool is the DRS is not only in the rear, it's also in the front. So where you normally have three radiators, the side splats, there's actually like a module in there as well that changes the aero along with the rear. Because if you change just the rear, it's going to throw off the balance of the vehicle. So they want to make sure that you have perfect balance front and rear. So when you hit that switch, what happens is it reduces aero in the rear or reduces that downforce in the rear as well as the front. Like it's super thought out. It's not just like, you know, just for show or for looks or anything like that. This is 100% like, you know, Porsche just going mad with this. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Like,
my only question is how, you know, if people will be trained to use it, because it's on, I saw the steering wheel, it's on the left side of the steering wheel. I don't know if people naturally will gravitate towards pressing that button, holding it down. I assume you have to hold it. The other cool thing is air brake. Like that is, you know, you hit the brakes and it's just a wall of drag basically. That's going to help you a lot in terms of slowing the car down. The air brake looks like it would be super effective. So these kind of active aero elements are just, it's another level in terms of, you know, this class of vehicle, I would say. Like it's stuff that we've seen obviously on race cars. Yeah, seeing it on a street car and, well, at least somewhat streetable.
Somewhat car. Street car.
Yeah, it is pretty neat. The tire size, we see 275 up front, 335s in the rear. So that's one up from the outgoing 991 GT3 RS, which is 265s and 325s in the back. A really big, tall tire. That's one thing. Oh, it's back to a 20 inch in the back. Must be, unless I made a typo. But that's because the old one had the double stagger with the 21 inch rear wheels. I
21.
Okay, yeah, that was a typo on my end. But yeah, basically a little bit, just a little bit wider. It means all these tire manufacturers have to make another size, one to accommodate the outgoing GT3 RS, one to accommodate the new one. But it is a lot of tire, and that is really the secret to making a fast car to set, you know, amazing lap records. It's just put as much tire as you can under it. That's the only reason why the domestics can get away with really not a lot of R&D, I would say, like to get really, really fast lap times, is because you put a Mustang and put 305 front tires on it, it's going to be fast. Same with the Z28 Camaro back in the day. They just put a huge amount of tire, huge amount of rubber under their aero, and it's kind of a cheap way to do performance, but it just works. And I think
increased traction.
Yeah, I mean, and this is a really thorough work through of the 992, right? Like this is such a far departure from the base car. Even, the control arms, they were talking about how,
Oh, the
a
teardrop
control arm
shape.
is now a teardrop shape just to be more aerodynamic, generate more downforce, less drag. Same idea, just smooth everything out. For the longest time, I think Porsche has been reusing a lot of their suspension components. But yeah, just putting more thought into it in terms of the aerodynamics of a control arm. It's just not something that a lot of manufacturers talk about, I think.
Or even think of, like, why would you make something one-off?
And well, and I mean, from the get-go, it's funny when you look back because it's like, well, why didn't we just make a more aerodynamic control arm to begin with? Well, and previous 996, 99, even 993 generation, they would have a control arm with a duct on it. That's kind of a lot of people retrofit those onto other cars, but it came from the 911 kind of. So that's pretty cool. The club sort package, so it has two packages, two main packages. Obviously, it's a Porsche, so you can option it however you like, do the paint to sample stuff. But club sort package, that's kind of your base track prep package. So that's going to have a steel roll bar, fire extinguisher, and 6-point harness in there. But that's kind of the base package. I don't know if anyone will choose it because if you get the chance to allocate yourself a GT3 RS, I don't see you cheaping out on that
Cheaping out,
package
yeah.
and getting and not getting the WISAC package. The only reason why you may not get the WISAC package, which I have the same beef with the GT4 RS, is the exposed carbon bits can be a little bit tacky, and I think the magnesium forged wheels in the red, like again, in their press photos, this is their press photos. They're putting their best foot forward. They have a McDonald's theme red wheel with the yellow caliper and just looks goofy. Like to me, the car could look cooler, but this is Porsche kind of flexing, right? They're showing off. This is any other manufacturer would be, embarrassed to put something out like this. But this is Porsche being the tastemaker that they are, and
I love the color combo. The
they can
white
put
on red
anything on
wheels
there. The white on red wheels is cool.
with the
Like
yellow
the
calipers.
996 GT3 made me fall in love with that combo. But the yellow calipers, it's a weird look. Like I feel like they could have gone with a different color scheme with the calipers with the WISAC package, but people are going to eat this up, and it's not like you really have any say in it because you probably don't have an allocation for this car. Now that brings us to actually, let's talk a few more things. The top speed, I notice more aggressive gearing with the PDK in this car. So it is, I believe it's PDK only,
PDK only.
7-speed PDK. And it's a GT kind of specific PDK. So it's got.
They change a final drive a little bit compared to the GT3 just
Yeah.
because of the. So when I was listening in to the guy explaining it, it was just because of the rear tire. That
Right.
was mainly because of that.
But the other thing is the top speed is relatively low. It's 296 kilometers an hour or 184 and a half miles per hour. That's basically lower than any other 911 right now. 184 is kind of where we were a long, long time ago. And because this is not a top speed car, there's no, realistically, there aren't racetracks that you can hit 200 miles per hour. 200 miles per hour, 20 years ago, it was a cool bragging right to have. But practically speaking, you could make the car perform better at realistic speeds by not having to focus on, we have to hit this top speed because a Turbo S will hit 205 miles per hour. If you want to go fast in a straight line on the Autobahn, that's the car to get. But realistically, if you're chasing lap times, that top speed is irrelevant. So I'm sure there are reasons they've done this, and the fact that it has more power than anything aside from the turbo, the big boy
Yeah,
turbo
518
911s.
horsepower
The
compared to
fact that it has
502.
that combined with this lower top speed tells me that this thing is going to accelerate like crazy with this gearing, because that's a very low top speed relative to the power that this is putting out, the 518 horsepower. Now, here's the thing, is the price. So the price is not really the issue, because the price is never an issue. Porsche MSRP is very reasonable. This thing starts in Canada at $248,000. This is a lot of car for $248,000. The problem is you'll never get it for $248,000.
I was going to say.
You won't even get it for $300,000, because you can't even get a 992 GT3 non-RS for $300,000. You're realistically looking at $400,000 for non-RS, which means the market price of this is going to be
500K.
Over 500. Yeah. It's so much more desirable, honestly, than the GT3 that I'm suspecting this to be 600,000 or so.
Yeah, just looking on Craigslist right now, there's a 911 2022 GT3 for 400K.
Yeah, and that's not like the anomaly. Everyone is asking that much for it. Now, how can you secure yourself one? Well, you have to buy that GT3 for 400,000, and then you got to trade it into dealer for 200,000. So take a 200K hit right off the bat. They will let you order a GT3 RS. You might have to wait a year and a half to 2 years, but you might get it. That's the problem. That is the biggest problem. Is like, in order to get it, like, there's, I don't even know why Porsche even sets a price on these, because their dealers mess up the market and they manipulate it in such a way that it's easily double. Like, 500,000, realistically, you shouldn't be surprised to see this thing at $500,000.
Yeah.
And because of all the trade-in and BS tactics that they do with allocation, that's why I kind of hate, I've mentioned it, I talk about it all the time, but I hate Porsche and the Porsche ownership and dealership experience, because it's just, it's not a very, I don't know, to me it just feels distasteful. Maybe it's just me, but yeah, don't expect this thing to be under $500,000, probably $500,000 US realistically. I'm sure it will perform, and I'm sure it will be an amazing car, but realistically, how many guys are going to enjoy their $500,000 cars? Like, I have a buddy that has the 992 GT3, and he's planning to, or actually he is picking up a Supra, just to, that will be his track toy, because this car being now worth 400K, like, how realistically, how hard are you going to drive it? It's the price of, you know, an average condo in, maybe not in Vancouver, but in, you know,
well,
a lot of parts of the world. You can get a lot of,
would be a full-on house in some parts of the world.
Yeah, it's a significant amount of money that it's just impractical to drive the wheels off of.
Yeah.
So unfortunately, I don't know how relevant this car is. I urge anyone that has a GT car or any 911 to not give in to the dealer tactics, but I get it.
That's not going to happen.
Yeah, because like I said, so GT4, that's the reason I say a GT4 trade-in is not worth anything to them, is if you think about it, this car is going to be over 500K market value. The car's MSRP is going to be under 300K. For me to get this car at 300K, even if I were to trade in my GT4 at $0, still does not even get me to market value. That is the issue, is that because they can't really give you kind of a dealer markup, at least in some markets they don't let you do that, depending on your distributor and whatnot, but even if I were to donate a GT4, I'm not really a VIP enough to get one at MSRP, at least to guarantee one. And that's the thing, is that dealers here have been caught, you know, hey, we'll trade in your car at this price, or we'll trade in your car at this price for 50K less, because I can guarantee you an allocation. So, like, the lineup, there's no lineup. right? It's just, they're just playing favorites at that point. It's not first come, first serve. It's not who's loyal to us. Like, oh, you've bought X many cars from us. It will help, but it's no guarantee, because ultimately each salesman is looking out for themselves. Each salesman is making anywhere from 25 to 40% of gross on a sale. So if I take in your GT4 at a $0 trade-in and I sell it for 180K, whatever market value is, that's like a 40K commission for me as a sales guy. Like, that's insane. And that's why this whole, you know, Porsche secondhand market is just out of control these days. Just buy something else. Buy a
400Z.
You could buy everything and it would cost less than this, but the depreciation, nothing holds value like this. I don't know. To me, I don't buy into the hype. I don't buy a car based on resale value. It's just, you know, that is a factor, I think, with a commuter car. But if I'm buying a fun toy, I want something I can actually enjoy. I don't want to be like, now this car is worth double what I paid for it. I'm not going to be able to enjoy it. Yeah. Another Porsche rant. I hate Porsches.
Beautiful car.
Beautiful car. Beautiful car. We'll never get to see the light of day.
Well,
that's the thing, is that people bring it to Cars and Coffee, but
yeah,
you'll see it maybe a combined mileage of all the local Vancouver area GT3 RS, probably a combined mileage of like 10,000 a year. And I put 4,500 on the GT4 since May.
You drove a lot.
I've driven a lot because, and that's the thing too, is like, you know, people, the Porsche guys make a good point, which is like, hey, I can track this thing. I can beat on it. I can take it, put as many Ks as I want, and I won't lose money. And that is kind of true on a high, you know, higher mileage car is still worth a lot of money. Mm-hmm. Still worth over MSRP. So if you got an MSRP, you're still winning.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, let's move on from Porsche before Justin goes off another rant.
Yeah, I'm going to burst a blood vessel. Well, I might burst a blood vessel just looking at this next car.
Well, this next car is an absolute beauty. It's the 2023 Dodge Hornet.
Hornet
is, if you don't know, was never really a Dodge product because it was an AMC first. AMC had the Hornet, and then Dodge, well, Chrysler, bought AMC, which then absorbed the Hornet. So they are kind of bringing back that name, but it's not really theirs. But the Hornet is a love child of the Alfa Romeo Tornale. Is it Tornale?
Yeah. Tornale.
Basically, they put Dodge-looking bumpers, front end, and backs on it, and call it a Hornet. That's basically what they've done here. The car is going to be built in Italy. And the last time they really did that was the Dodge Dart. And if you don't remember the Dodge Dart, it's because it didn't sell well. So who knows with this exactly how it's going to go. But it is an SUV, which people are looking for. Comes in two trims, really. The GT and the higher performance RT. The GT is a 2-liter turbocharged 4 that makes 268 horsepower and 295 pound-feet of torque. 9-speed auto, 0 to 16, about 6.5. Pretty decent numbers. The RT is actually a plug-in hybrid, getting you 30 miles or 48 kilometers of range. It makes more power at 288 horsepower and more torque at 383. 0 to 60, about 6.1. So, like, in terms of power, it's not bad. However, I was taking a look. I was like, this kind of class of car is like a subcompact. That's not really a subcompact, but not a really a full compact, because just the overall size, because this is smaller than a Cherokee but bigger than like the Compass and whatnot. So a really good competitor to this would be one of my favorites, a Mazda CX-30. The CX-30 turbo with 250 horsepower does 5.8 0 to 60. So it's already faster.
I mean, it's less power and range and 0 to 60 time and reliability and space than a RAV4 Prime. Right? Again, that's an unobtainable car right now, but I mean, there are competitors coming that are benchmarking against that car. It's, I don't get this car. I don't know why we need two models to flop. Like, they are bringing that Alfa Romeo here, aren't they?
They are, but the Alfa is going to flop because it's an Alfa. That's yeah, the
so
thing.
It's going to be overpriced.
Yeah.
And equally poorly built and have all the same flaws. So this will be more aggressively priced, I would assume.
It is. So it starts at 30,000 US with the plug-in hybrid at 40,000 US.
40,000 buys you a RAV4 Prime.
Yeah.
Even at a little bit of a markup. Which is still a better buy. Because
but at the end, you can tell people you drive a Toyota. This, you tell people you drive a an Alfa Romeo. Not really.
With a Dodge badge on. It's a GL8. They do have the Goes Like Hell.
They do have the package. It's a concept for now. It's only available on the GT model, so the standard 2-liter turbo. You get lowered suspension, upgraded exhaust, 20-inch wheels, some stripes on it, blackout front and rear fascias, and GLH badges. It is a concept. Not sure if they're actually going to make it.
Yeah, but they should have a little GLHF package. Good luck, have fun if you do buy one of these Dodge Hornets, because I don't see any purpose of it.
Okay. Above the price, above like the specs, like it's not horrible. I would say 30,000 US for everything that you kind of are, you know, getting. Just it's not horrible, but I'm not a fan of the looks. The Alfa Romeo looks so much better than this.
Yeah,
the front end doesn't have the Dodge look. It has a Dodge bumper. Yes.
No, and then you see the side and you're like, oh, that's an Alfa Romeo. Like,
yeah,
the side profile does not match the front. And
no, the window cutout is nothing like a Dodge, and the rear end is nothing like a Dodge.
Yeah, it looks like an Alfa 156 from the side from like the 2000s.
I guess. Yeah, there's nothing about it that screams Dodge, and that's the biggest kind of failing because the Dodge makes up, like, sure, they don't make the best of cars, but they have that distinctive kind of look to
it. It doesn't even go with the Dodge theme, right? The Dodge theme is to make kind of brutish cars, you know, that are excessive.
Yeah,
but this has no excess in terms of power, range, styling, performance, value, space, or any like objective criteria that you measure a car from. There is no excess here. Like, this is not what Dodge is about. This is not what Dodge needs. This is not going to help their brand. This is not going to be like a stepping stone. Like, hey, I bought a Hornet. Maybe 5 years down the road, I can afford a Durango. Like, I don't see that.
No, it's actually kind of sad, to be very honest, because I feel like this is going to be like the Dart. It really is.
I just don't see this badge engineering thing working. Like, it just has not had a good history of working. I wonder if it's just Stellantis just kind of trying to average it out because they know the Alfa is going to flop. So they have to... This will probably outsell the Alfa because
it probably will.
There's going to be more Dodge dealerships.
That's the thing. Right, there's going to be more dealerships,
and there's more affinity to the Dodge brand in America, at least. And yeah, I could see that helping it a little bit. But
did you know Stelvios are really cheap?
Oh, used Stelvios?
Yeah,
I cannot. Someone asked me, like, I have a few car guy friends who are like, should I get that Giulia Quadrifoglio? I'm like, I can't advise to do that. Like, it is rare, but rarity is in itself is not a good you know, is not inherently a positive attribute, right? Like, it is rare to see someone use a rotary phone or have a rotary engine or be in the rotary club these days. But, you know, like, it doesn't mean it's a good thing to be proud of, right? Yeah.
Like, a 2017, 2018 Julian Stelvios are like 30 grand.
And you still shouldn't buy one because there's no servicing. If you have to bring it to a dealer, you're not going to have parts. I don't know. I don't think
that's an if you need to bring it to a dealer. It's when you have to bring it to a dealer.
Yeah, and they're not cheap. Like a Quadrifoglio, they're asking over 70K for them. That's M3 money.
Yeah.
Why would you not buy a proven product with lots of parts and servicing and history? Like, say something happens with your M3, right?
Justin, like, you don't get it. You don't get it. When you go to Cars and Coffee and there's already four other M3s there, what does it matter? However, when you show up on your tow truck with your Alfa Romeo Quadrifoglio, you'll be the only guy there with a tow truck.
But yeah, you will make friends with your BCAA rep. Like,
yeah,
you'll have them on speed dial.
You get full use of your gold membership. All right, that's exactly what that's for.
That's true. I mean, I have like a PD auto club thing with my credit card, and I've never used it.
Yeah, I never used it. I only bought Hondas. That's the problem. We need to buy an Alfa Romeo. That's what we need to do.
That's true. You do get to make use of kind of perks that you didn't know you had.
Let's move on from that. Let's talk about Dodge is going crazy this week because it's Speed Week. So they have a bunch of things that they announced. So let's just kind of fire through these here. Durango SRT Hellcat is back for 2023. They killed it off for 2022 because of reasons, but it's back. 710 horsepower, 645 pound-feet of torque, 180 mile per hour trap speed at quarter mile. That's crazy. Oh no, that's not right. It's 180 mile per hour. That's top speed, not trap speed. Sorry, 11.5 is the trap time.
But hey, that's almost as much as a GT3 RS.
But yeah, this thing is absolutely crazy. It's back for 2023. If you are in the market for a three-row SUV that, you know, just you want to be absolutely nuts for, that tows 8,700 pounds, why not? Actually, you know what? You need a truck, don't you?
Wait, did they not have a Durango SRT Hellcat
before? Yeah, they did. They killed it off for 2022.
They killed it off and they brought it
back. They brought back.
The news story is, hey, we brought this.
Yeah, this it literally says like returns to the Dodge lineup. With
basically no changes.
No, there's no change. Not that I saw anyways.
Okay. Yeah. I don't get how this is news. It's like, hey, we brought the iPhone 4 back. Like,
but it was the best iPhone 4 ever.
It was a great phone. I love my iPhone 4. But why?
Well, you know, it's for people who really wanted that. And then the people that had that 2021 model and they're like, oh, I got the last of the Hellcat. When they're like hoping that the
speculative market like,
yeah, they'll just go crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. All that's just gone now. But let's talk about the Charger and Challenger. As we talked before the show started. Yes, they still make it.
They still make it.
They still make it.
People still buy them. You know, I haven't gone to the States once without seeing one, like, on the highway. Like, I just always have one, and they always want to race me.
Yeah. Well, I mean, let's be honest. A Charger and Challenger, like, not the Hellcat ones. I'm talking about, like, even the RTs, SRTs ones. They're actually not like horrible, and they're relatively inexpensive for, you know, a big muscle car with like 400 horsepower, right? But they're bringing back three heritage colors: blue, B5 blue, plum crazy purple, and sublime green. 2023 RT models will now have 345 on the fender to tell you that it has 345 cubic
inches
inch motor in there. And there's also a little information of a drop top challenger. If you want to send your challenger off to this company called Drop Top, I believe it was called. Where did I put it?
Drop Top Customs.
Drop Top Customs. That's right. It was for 26,000 Canadian, or sorry, 26,000 American dollars. They will deliver the challenger to them, and they can make it into a convertible for you.
Huh. You know what? Used Hellcats challengers are only going for 70K.
Yeah.
That better, is a lot of car for your. That is better value than
a Quadrifoglio.
Quadrifoglio, exactly. Like, if you want a lot of power, or I don't know, it's more reliable than a Quadrifoglio.
The thing is, the Wrangle SRTs were very expensive. Last time I checked, they're over rare. 120.
They're so rare, and even the Trackhawk, Jeeps are not cheap. Yeah,
like okay, this is just me. I don't really need the Trackhawk. I don't need that supercharger. Just give me the regular SRT and I'll be very happy.
Yeah, you can't even really track it.
No, you're not going to. It's just the I took a regular Durango SRT to the States. It was the best time ever. Because, theoretically, on the I-5, there were cars pulling next to me and we did pulls. But that didn't actually happen.
Allegedly,
yeah. But yeah, these are all the kind of like old Dodge news, right? Nothing really too important, but they did release something that I'm very, very excited about. This is
actual news, right? Like, this is the only news story from Stellantis that is actually of any relevance. Like, yes, they have a new model, the Dodge Hornet. Yes, they have a recycled model, the Durango SRT, and the Charger and the Challenger, but this is the only real news.
Okay, so the real news is Dodge Charger Daytona SRT concept. It's the brand's electrified future. So what they've done here is it's a brand new vehicle. It's, think of the 70s Charger, so a two-door Charger, but modernized into an EV. That's basically what they've done here. Don't take the Daytona name. It doesn't have the Daytona front end. It doesn't have a giant wing in the rear.
It kind of has a Daytona front end.
It kind of does, but you don't see it. So there's three things that is game-changing, patent-pending features that make up the core for the Charger Daytona SRT concept. The first is the R wing. So what's the R wing? It's the aerodynamic wing that has this profile on the front end, achieving aerodynamic efficientness, but still has a look
of a Dodge. Where are the bananas? Like, I don't see any bananas on there.
Okay, so I think it's like you get this muscle car front end, squared off front end, but any EV, you don't get that, right? You get smooth out front end.
Car that we always talk about.
Yeah. And you have to do that for efficiency. This looks
really cool.
It looks amazing because it has this, it's very similar to the Jaguar I-Pace. I-Pace has a very similar thing. Above the grill, it directs that air through. It's exactly the same, kind of. It just directs that air through over the hood. And because of that, it still looks like a muscle car, but you get this airflow.
Super cool. It's got that long hood, short deck look that muscle cars are known for. It's really cool because it looks futuristic, right? It also looks curvy. It doesn't look, like it's from the 60s, but it just looks
it's modern.
It's more modern, a lot more modern than the Challenger. Challenger looks like it's from the 60s.
Some people don't buy that. So the other game-changing device that they have on here is the Fratzonic chambered exhaust. So in the press release, they didn't talk too much about it. They didn't say it's a speaker or whatever. Pretty sure it's a speaker. There's no way that the EV motor can make this sound. But it's a chambered tube, essentially, that makes sounds. And I'm going to show you what it sounds like. Not like that. One sec.
Part of it is this background music.
And that's what it sounds like.
It is an evil robot noise. I'm curious how it will sound like when you're actually moving and shifting.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, that's how that's a neutral kind of rev, right? I mean, in the press release, it says it's 126 decibels. That's loud.
That's definitely loud enough to get you in trouble, not only in Vancouver, but anywhere, because 126 decibels is a lot of noise. Like, if I'm pulling into my townhouse and revving with that, I would definitely get something.
I'm sure there's a mode that you can turn that off, but 126
decibels. I'm sure you can turn this off completely, because it is pumped in. I don't know how they're doing it, but we can guess, right?
Like, it sounds like a speaker. It sounds like
it might be amplifying and auto-tuning like the natural whir of the electric motors. That's my guess. And it's piping it through a chambered actual exhaust pipe to make it kind of more dynamic sounding. But yeah, that's my guess. But it is really loud. It is very different. And I think it's kind of necessary. Like, it's necessary in a Dodge kind of way.
It is. I kind of wish it could be just the audio from that video, but I wished it was more bass heavy, was more heart thumping.
You want the fart sounds like the Teslas?
No, I don't want that. I just want something that sounds like an actual V8.
Yeah, I think it would be cool, and someone is going to figure out in the aftermarket how to pipe in different tones.
They did that with Tesla. There's an aftermarket company that you can buy exhaust for.
Yeah.
You can change it like supercar sounds, V8 sounds. You can make
it. But it will just be more cool in this because it will have kind of actual RPM and stuff like that. And it will go up to 126 decibels.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then the last game-changing thing is the eRupt. It's the multi-speed transmission with electromechanical shifting experience.
I think it's going to be like a CVT that has those like programmed in shift
notches. Yeah, multi-speed transmission.
Yeah, it's very vague. It's not like,
I mean,
this is a 6-speed.
They didn't say like multi, because like 2 is multi, right? And the Taycan, e-tron, that has 2-speed transmission. Mm-hmm. So it could be just 2-speed, so you can like shift from low to high. Or something like that. Yeah. But there's no information about it of exactly what it is. But there is a really cool power shot push to pass feature. Activated by a push of the button on the steering wheel. You hit this power shot button, it gets an increase of horsepower with a quick burst of acceleration.
Mm-hmm. Much like in Mario Kart when you hit the arrows. It will just
that's the reference we're going with.
Yeah, I wonder how that will work. Electric motors are kind of interesting. You know, I've been riding a lot of e-scooters lately, and they kind of like, even though they have this power on tap, peak power is very different, and so I guess there's extra power on reserve that is not normally activated. I don't know. All this is really cool because the car looks almost production ready. I think we'll see something in the very near future. And I think all of this technology is relevant because I can see Dodge, Stellantis actually implementing a lot of this stuff on a production vehicle. Like, it is their brand. This is actually their brand, right? Like, this is the actual future of their brand. It's not the Dodge Hornet.
No, I'll mute that first before I play that. Sorry. You're absolutely right. The Hornet is not the future of Dodge. This is the future of Dodge, and it looks absolutely amazing. When I saw this, I was just browsing through Facebook, and I saw David Freiberger post about it. I mean, he's a big Dodge guy, and he was like, even he said, I think in his post that he says it looks great.
Yeah. Like, the proportions are just right. Like, this is so on brand, but also like, hey, it probably won't have the chassis of a 1990s Mercedes. And that is already like, that's all the departure I really need from you, Dodge.
This rear window reminds me of the GTR.
Mm-hmm.
That rear window cutout. That. It's a little bigger, but it has that, especially with the door.
No, it's very Charger, to be fair.
Yeah. I don't have any problems with it. It's great looking
vehicle. It looks great from every angle. It sounds like it will perform. I'm not sure if it will handle, but it will handle better than the outgoing.
Well, it has all-wheel drive. It can't
be any worse.
It has all-wheel drive, and they said it will be faster than a Hellcat.
There you go.
I mean, what more do you need? Mm-hmm. Brembo brakes on all four. The interior even looks really nice.
It looks very production ready too.
Yeah. It doesn't look like an actual concept vehicle. But yeah, I think that's really it for this week. Ending with an amazing SRT concept, which I can't wait to get my hands on.
Yeah, and it's going to spawn like trucks and SUVs.
Mm. Yes, yeah, absolutely.
I can't wait.
The next Durango Charger Daytona concept.
Like some kind of Ram TRX with Fretsonic exhausts.
Ooh. Ooh. Yeah, that's exactly what's going to happen. In like 10 years time, it's still going to be exactly the same. When other people or other manufacturers go in completely different direction,
Dodge is going to stay. I don't even know what Fretsonic means. Like,
yeah. Anyways, thank you so much for watching. We'll catch you next week in more automotive news.
Peace.